Great. So I'm Rick Hansen. This is November 21st, 2012. And as you may know, if you've been here before, I'm talking about and we're exploring refuges, this idea of what is it in our lives, inside ourselves, as well as inside our circumstances, that protects us, gives us sanctuary, feeds us, refuels us, repairs us, inspires us, lifts us, buoys us, carries us along in a good way, like a beautiful warm current. What are those things? And classically, as you may know, in Buddhism, there are said to be three primary refuges, and then there are of course, other refuges that you can think about in terms of the qualities of an awakened being or the divine abiding places, the perfections of a bodhisattva, and so forth. And then in general, outside of Buddhism, there are many ways to think about refuge. You know, reason, science, your cat, chocolate chip cookies, friends. Maybe you like who's in the White House, you know, depending on whatever your interests are. So there are many things we can take refuge in. And in the Buddhist frame, the three primary refuges, the three jewels, are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The teacher, as well as the capacity for awakening inside each one of us, that's Buddha. Dharma is truth. That's what I talked about last week. The truth of things, as well as a truthful account of the truth of things. The body of teachings, broadly defined, including the teachings in a Buddhist frame, which is our frame here, my frame here at least, the teachings in Buddhism, that's the Dharma. And then there's Sangha, which is a gathering of people on the path, that's the original meaning. It began as a respect for the people who are very far along in practice and taking refuge in their teachings and their modeling after the Buddha passed away. And then over time, the notion of Sangha became more spread out to include the gathering as a whole. For example, there's a well-known interchange in the Dharma between the Buddha and Ananda. Ananda, his cousin and his attendant, someone with an amazing auditory memory, Ananda. And Ananda turned to the Buddha one day and looked at the gathering of people around and said, "Look, noble sir, this is half the holy life." In other words, this is the half that's out there contrasted to the half that's in here. Why would he say half? Why wouldn't he say 58% or 24%? You know, he said half. He was making the distinction, that which produces the holy life in here compared to that which produces it, as it were, supports it from out there. And the Buddha looked at Ananda and said, "Not so, Ananda, not so. This is the whole of the holy life. Because without these supports, we couldn't do this holy life at all." The Buddha himself did not come out of the egg, as it were, fully awakened. He needed his own teachers. He needed his own processes. He needed, as the story has it, a woman to feed him when he was on the edge of starvation, which was the turning point for him, away from asceticism, toward the middle way, and then ultimately to his own, and soon after actually, to his own awakening. So we need that which is seemingly outside us. But is it actually outside us at all? In a way, what I think the Buddha is saying when he says this is the whole of the holy life is that the division between inner and outer is really quite arbitrary. And actually, it's very, very porous. We are buoyed, we are fed, we are lived, we are loved by so many forces. And the distinctions between us and them are very, very blurry, which goes to one of the fundamental teachings in Buddhism of interdependent arising, that everything arises due to causes. I think of the universe in some ways like this kind of vast sort of net, or like a trampoline. That's a traditional metaphor as well, Indra's net. But it's like a vast tapestry, and any wiggling in it ripples through the tapestry as a whole and lifts us. We're continually lifted. It's as if we're, you've probably done this, you know, maybe floating in the ocean in a very comfortable way, maybe with a life jacket on, or one of my favorite things, I remember doing this with our daughter for hours in Hawaii, would be to sit on these sort of boogie boards and just sit, and these big swells lift you, and sometimes you'll be lifted up, and sometimes you'll be in a trough, and a 10-foot swell will be above you, and you'll see a fish swimming in that swell, you know, 6 feet above your head in that moment, and then the wave comes through and lifts you up and passes on. Well, we really live our life in that way. All these waves passing through us, physical material waves, waves of evolution, waves of culture, and certainly very local waves of all the people in our personal life, all the people who carry us along. And reflecting on community, Sangha, for tonight, I found myself having a very novel idea. Usually when people talk about the Dharma, in a sense, it's an argument for futility. In other words, it's the idea that our normal strategy of reaching for things and trying to essentialize them and stabilize them is doomed. It's a fundamentally frustrating strategy. And it's the act of, it's the enactment of that doomed, futile strategy again and again and again. That's the fundamental engine of suffering. That's the essence of the teaching, the way it's usually presented. I think it's true. I think it really is true. Things are changing so fast, especially in your own experience, your own phenomenology, that the instant you try to grab onto them or grapple with them, you're in trouble. But here's the other side of it, which relates to the Buddha's statement to Ananda. Not so, Ananda, not so. Maybe the other side of the Dharma, the other way of looking at it, is that it's not just that this strategy is doomed, as it were, but that it's unnecessary. We don't have to do it. We don't need to grapple and scratchle along, because we're already so profoundly buoyed and fed by everything that is. That's pretty remarkable. That, in other words, awareness itself is always here and available to us. Thoughts and feelings, sensations, sounds, sights, tastes, touches arise and pass away like little tiles, if you will, in the mosaic of this moment of experience. But awareness is like the grout, right? And you can even do these little thought experiments. I read one like this quite recently. If you just think a thought deliberately, like dog, or I have a bus, or I have a coat, whatever, I have a cup. And then watch the experience for about a half second to second right after the end of that thought. You have this funny awareness of a fundamentally kind of present, awake, impersonal, profoundly peaceful, utterly undisturbed, utterly composed, in a sense, quality of mind. And so awareness is continually feeding us the ultimate unconditioned that everything arises out of and passes away into. That's feeding us. And then think of all the good people, all the love we've received, all the caring, all the good qualities in our own heart. You know, your own goodness, your own fairness, your own grit, your own wishing well, your own good intentions. Maybe your performance is not perfect. I talked about that a couple weeks ago. But your intentions can be pure. So maybe the truth of things is it isn't just that it's hopeless to try to grasp after things and live from craving, but weirdly, it's actually not necessary. Our habit is to do it again and again and again, but if you actually experience or just feel into. What is it like to just be? Just being? As in the meditation tonight? Or what is simply being aware like? I'm not talking mystically about cosmic consciousness, but ordinary awareness, you know, the grout between the tiles. And it's like in those states, there's no problem. There's really no need to grasp. Obviously, if your hand's on the hot stove, you pull it back. If you're thirsty, you drink. But that doesn't need to be craving involved in that, because you feel there really is no basis for that craving. So in a lot of ways, what Buddhism is about, I think, is exploring and bringing it closer and closer to home. What is it like to live on the basis of no craving? What's that like? Not contracted, not scarce, not straining, no pressure. In a certain radical way, quite abandoned to the way it is, quite given up, and yet also incredibly juiced by all this amazing stuff flowing through you each moment. So it's like how to live that way more and more, how to kind of make room for it, and create sanctuary for it. A great way into this feeling is through feeling really fed, so that the little lizard and rat and monkey inside each one of us feels handled. It's okay. You know, as I've talked about, you know, pet the lizard, feed the rat, hug the monkey. You know, they're okay, right? They can relax. So in a moment, I want to do a two-step sort of process with you. And in the first step, if you're up for it, and you can always opt out, as always, anything, I'll invite you to find a partner. And then with your partner, you'll pick an A and a B. One person will mainly speak, one person will mainly listen. A's will be the first speaker, then you'll switch roles, the usual. And this will be brief, and I think I'll try to do this for a couple different partners. When you talk, when you're the speaker, see if you can talk about and open to the experience of, even as you're talking, what lifts you? What carries you? What are you grateful for? What are you thankful for? What are you glad about? What gives you a darn good ride? Whatever that is. And including just kind of free associating. And so then if you're the listener, your job is really simple. It's just to receive the speaker. And in particular, see the truth for that person of those things that she or he is really fed by, really lifted by. Okay? Is that pretty clear? Want to try that? Sounds like a pretty fun thing to do, I don't know, to me, on the eve of Thanksgiving. So if you're up for it, grab a partner. Spread out. It could be someone you know already or a new person in your life. If you could spread out a little bit so you feel like you can speak freely. And then you'll pick an A and a B. If you want a partner and don't have one, raise your hand. Oh, great. Very, very good. Okay, great. Pick that A and the B. All right, great. Good, sir. Just a reminder, A's and lots of things. Trying not to get into the story of it. Just, you know, ba-boom, ka-boom, ka-boom for about a minute and a half, okay? So A's, what are some things, tell your partner, that really feed you, that lift you, that carry you along, you know, that for you, in a sense, are the fuel of the whole of the holy life. Okay, A's begin. Thank you. 30 seconds. Start wrapping it up. Okay. And then please switch roles. Bees, now it's your turn to speak. What are you thankful for? What lifts you and carries you? Bees, begin. Seconds. Wrap it up. Okay. Now, if it's okay, I request that you find another partner, and we'll do a different thing. So it'll be also quick. So find a different partner, please. Spread out again, so you can speak kind of freely. Musical partners. And then you'll pick an A and a B. If you want a partner and don't have one, raise your hand. Where's your partner? Where's your partner? You could be the same person again if it happens that way. Okay, good. Okay, pick an A and a B. Okay, now here's how this works. This is a slightly different format. A's, you're going to ask your partner a question over and over and over again. Okay? And then B's, you're going to respond and try not to get into a lot of story. Responses that are brief are good because that'll give you an opportunity to respond again and again and again. It's kind of neat sometimes to go with just whatever arises initially. And it's also neat to kind of go into a pretty intuitive, spacious place if you get taken there. Okay? So get ready and I'll feed you the question. So the question is, what's already all right? What's already all right? About anything, including the world, yourself, you know, kind of, you might have an intuition about what would be really useful for you to name. What's already right? All right. Okay, A's, start asking B's. And when B's give an answer, say thank you. Don't judge, don't comment, and then ask the question again. What else is already all right? Okay, what is already all right? Begin. Thirty seconds. Start wrapping it up. Okay, get ready to switch. All right, bees, your turn. You know how it works now. So B's start asking A's again and again, what's already all right? Begin. Thirty seconds. Okay, we'll start wrapping it up.
Okay. Okay, so listen up. Here's the next part. This is an experiment. I've never done this in this kind of setting. Hopefully it'll go well. So I ask you to just try it. And obviously if you want to opt out, just kind of slide to the background. In a moment, we'll be standing up. So if you're willing, how about you stand up? And I'll explain what we're about to do. And if you can't stand, it's okay. You can stay in place. And in a moment, we'll start milling around the room. A lot of us know each other. We've been here with each other for quite some time. Some of us don't know each other. It's really okay. It's all the same. And what you'll do is you'll just wander around, see someone, and you'll have a little encounter. If you want to prolong it, it's perfectly fine. If you just want it to be brief, that's perfectly fine too. Here's how it works. This is from Reverend Ike, one of these preachers down in LA. And the way the practice goes, and this will be good because I don't know you well. You come up to a person, you just make a little contact. You don't have to give them the SLN hippie stare, you know. Just normal. And you look at them and you find something genuine, like I can see. Presence of humor in me recognizes the presence of humor in you. So you locate something authentic. I really, just quite brief, our contact with each other, but I could see the truth of that. And it's in me, it's in you. There's a sense of a register. Then the person goes, and then he could say something to me or not as he chooses. He could say the same thing back. That's always an easy one. Or just something else. It went off, and then you break contact, and you move on to someone else. This can be actually become quite deep. And it can also be really quite gay and quite fun. So you see how the basic format works? It's quite straightforward. You locate something in yourself, or you see it in someone, and then you see if you can also find it in yourself. And if you can, then you could name it. Right? Because I might say, the presence of clarity in me recognizes the presence of clarity in you. You're always telling the truth. Okay?
And then would I have that opportunity at that time mm-hmm. to respond to you?
Yeah, totally. And you can go back and forth for a while. You can just da-da, quick. See how it works? Mm-hmm. Kind of sweet. Mm-hmm. And the larger frame is, it's already here, you know? It's already here, in other words. It's the undoing of the causes of craving and therefore suffering. Right? And then it's to have the experience of that last for more than a half second, again and again and again, becoming more and more continuous. You want to try it?
Sure.
Give it a whirl. And if you want to stay seated, people will come see you. Okay? All right. Turn to someone. Grab them. Have it be real. Begin. Oh, the presence of love in me recognizes the presence of love in you.
The presence of sweetness in me recognizes the presence of sweetness in you.
Thank you. The presence of intelligence in me recognizes the presence of intelligence in you. The presence of massive amounts of integrity in me recognizes the presence of massive amounts of integrity in you.
Thank you.
I hope to have as much integrity as you, actually, so I was thinking about it.
You don't know me yet. You just feel it. I hope it's true. I hope it's true. The teacher in me recognizes the teacher in me, too.
Thank you.
And honors you for it.
Thank you.
Be well. I'll see you in a few weeks. We're leaving town.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I still got to see them on Loopers.
Oh, you did. That's right. That's right. Well, the presence of playfulness in me recognizes the presence of playfulness in you.
Playfulness.
Playfulness.
I don't consider myself playful. Not these days. I have a hard time.
Yeah. See you then.
I hope it's coming back.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'd say also the presence of softness in you can recognize the presence of softness in you.
Might be a little bit too soft. I've been beaten down so much.